If you enjoy what you hear on Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons and want to be part of bringing others together to work for the common good and flourishing of your community, why not consider helping to bring the Q Conference experience to your town for one special night on October 26th?
Christians believe that culture making is taking the raw material that God has made, and we're rearranging material for human flourishing and human thriving as God defines it.
Q Commons is a special live event featuring great national thought leaders plus local ones too. In hosting a Q Commons event, you'll be part of unifying believers in your community, promoting dialogue on difficult but important issues, and encouraging action for the common good. Q Ideas can guide you on how to host a Q Commons event. We can provide technical support and coaching to help you put together an event in your city. To learn more, visit qcommons.com. Q Commons, a global event advancing local good.
Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to another edition of the Q Podcast. I'm Gabe Lyons, and today we're talking about science. We're talking about the galaxies. We're talking about stars. And it's not just us talking about it. We're hearing from the person who's the senior project scientist for the Hubble telescope and the entire project of looking into the galaxies and the universe and appreciating God's good creation. And Jennifer Wiseman, who you're going to hear from in just a moment, is just amazing. Like, can you imagine that job of just getting to stare out into space, looking millions of miles away at stars and interpreting what you're seeing and appreciating God's good creation? And as somebody who's a follower of Christ, she has this beautiful understanding of it that from a scientific perspective kind of blows my mind. But she's sitting with her friend, Louis Giglio, and Louis is someone who many of you may have heard of. He leads Passion. Also, this great movement where college students from all over the world are having encounters with Jesus because of the work that Passion does. Well, Louis has this special appreciation. One of his hobbies is to look out into space, and he loves telescopes, and he loves studying the stars. He gave an amazing talk on this many years ago that just went viral, called Indescribable, that so many people are still watching today because it just helped us understand how much God loves us when you look at the universe. Well, in this talk, you're not going to have the benefit on the podcast of seeing the images, but if you'll go online to qideas.org, you can actually watch this talk and see some of the images that Jennifer displays that we're seeing from the Hubble telescope and have an intriguing conversation about science, about faith, about how these two do come together, why we don't have to abandon science just because we're a Christian. And many young people are having that experience today. They're saying, wait, can I not appreciate science and be a Christian? And this conversation, I think, is one of those you could forward on to them, share it with them, and say, no, listen to this. Listen to the person who's leading the Hubble telescope project and understand how she is a person of faith, but absolutely loves science and understands that through science, we actually get to observe so much more and understand so much more about our God. So let's listen in.
It's a real treat to introduce Dr. Jennifer Wiseman to everyone today, and just to tell a small anecdote as well. Dr. Wiseman has done so many amazing things, but what I love about her is she's the only person at Q that I'm aware of who has a comet named after them, and that was part of her undergraduate research, and it's a 114P periodic comet called Wiseman-Skiff. That's what she was doing as an undergrad. I was playing ping pong and failing out of Georgia State University as an undergrad. So this is one small difference between having a pastor and an astrophysicist on the same stage together. But I think astronomically speaking, my short time of knowing her over the past few years, she has a tendency to be in the right place at the right time. She's currently the chief of the lab of exoplanets and stellar astrophysics at the Goddard Space Center. And she's on the leading edge of what you've seen on your online little news blurbs a lot, which is the exoplanet explosion and the conversation that's happening around that. But she also is a follower of Christ. And the way that I met her, interestingly, is Matt Redman, who's a worship leader, and myself being a pastor, we're writing a book together on devotional ideas around astronomy. And a few years back, we were looking for another scientific backstop, because as a pastor and a worship leader, you want to make sure you have good science. And so we thought we'd just take a shot at it. And we went online and looked at the American Scientific Affiliation, of which Jennifer is part of the leadership of. And there were several names listed online, none of whom we knew, of course. But one of them was Dr. Jennifer Wiseman. Wiseman? Astronomy? God? Anybody? Yeah. There are three guys followed a star to Jesus, in case you're not ahead, not with me. And so we thought, this must be a sign from God. Any astronomer named Wiseman or Wiseman is going to lead us to the right deal. She was kind enough to host us at Goddard, and a little friendship blossomed there. Undergraduate in physics at MIT, in case anybody really needs to be impressed more. And PhD from Harvard in astronomy. So would you guys please welcome Jennifer Wiseman. Thanks. So, Jennifer, I think a lot of people want to know, how do you end up being an astronomer? You grew up in Southwest USA and ended up now at Goddard Space Flight Center. How did the journey start for you?
It was not planned. Okay, so I grew up on a farm in Arkansas, so all I can say is what drew me to study the stars was being able to see the stars. I could go out every night, and the sky was dark, and I could look up and see a night sky that would blow you away. So I love space ever since I was growing up, but I never had a backyard telescope, nothing like that. So that kind of blossomed later in my collegiate years of thinking of it as a profession.
So one thing that you're very close to personally is the Hubble, and yeah. The Hubble has revolutionized our seeing,
right,
and understanding of space. Tell people who've heard Hubble Space Telescope but really don't have a clue what that means. Give them just a little glimpse into this magnificent instrument and what it does.
So Hubble is one of many telescopes that we have available now to study the heavens with, but it's the one that most people know about in the sense that people have seen these marvelous images. Hubble is a satellite. It's orbiting the Earth about every 90 minutes. It's whizzing around. And the reason, of course, it's up there is because it's above the atmosphere, so we can get very sharp images. And it's revolutionized our understanding of the universe. So I love the Hubble Space Telescope. But it's not the one that I've used the most. Mostly my own research on how stars form and the systems where young planets form have been by using radio telescopes on the ground. So we need all kinds of instruments working together to study the heavens with.
So you brought some images for us today.
I did.
And what do you have for us?
Well, I don't know if we can, with the lights here, if people can see these very well, but we have some spectacular imagery.
Okay, wow. People are going to look at that and go, what in the world is that? That looks like a little jewel cluster.
Okay. The lights may be too bright in here to see them, but they are stars, of course. And this is one of the recent images from the Hubble Space Telescope. It's the Omega Centauri star cluster. It's in our own galaxy, few thousand light years away, but I think this is a spectacular image because it shows you the range of the sizes, brightnesses, and colors of stars. Hubble's newest camera has a range of colors that goes from the infrared in light where we can't see all the way through visible colors and in a little bit to the ultraviolet wavelengths of light, and those colors are compressed a bit in the color scale here so you can see all the different types of stars. And just the beauty therein. I love this because it looks to me like a collection of gemstones. It's also interesting scientifically because you can look at these stars and categorize them by their colors and by their brightnesses and find out how old they are and how old this cluster is.
I love one of the things you just mentioned was that one of the telescopes, and so a lot of people think Hubble is a telescope, but there are a lot of different features.
They're different
Hubble
instruments. So Hubble is an observatory with several different kinds of cameras and what we call spectrographs, which take the light and spread it out into its constituent colors so we can find out things about the chemistry of what we're looking at.
So let's talk about galaxies for a minute. We live, obviously, in the Milky Way galaxy. Most people know that. But
yep,
there are galaxies out there that absolutely blow our minds in terms of beauty and
okay,
what they're comprised
let's
of.
Let's look at
happening
one. You want to look at one?
Absolutely. What do
let's
you have?
Let's see if I can. There's one. NGC 1309, a beautiful name. It kind of rolls off the tongue.
Someone's going to walk away and say, what is this NGC in front of all these numbers? So tell everybody what that means.
Catalog names. There are different kinds of catalogs that different astronomers have made throughout history. And so that's just a particular catalog of galaxies. But I like this particular image just because it shows you the symmetry, the beauty of this particular spiral galaxy, and even the background stuff. The junk in the background of this image is beautiful. You'll see galaxies in the background. And I love the symmetry here. What people don't realize is that the heavens are very active. These galaxies are not just sitting there. They're not stagnant. We talk about how God created the heavens and the earth, and we get this image that everything is just kind of sitting there. But no, since the dawn of time, the universe has been unfolding in amazing ways. And one way is to see what's happening inside galaxies. Here's an image of actually two galaxies that are merging together, and we do see galaxies interacting with each other. If they are close enough to have mutual gravitational tug, they will start disrupting each other, even pulling each other together and tidally disrupting one another. And the bright colors you see in this image are places where the turbulence from this merger has spawned new star formation. That's another piece of activity going on. People don't realize that stars are continually forming. That's my own expertise is, you know, how do stars form? How are they forming? What happens to them once they form? And how do you see them if they haven't yet formed? That's a very active field.
So we're looking across time and space.
Yeah.
And how far can we see?
Well, we see quite far. You've all heard the numbers. They're mind-boggling. But even our nearest neighbor star is several light years away. So everything you look at in space, of course, you're looking at it as it was when it emitted that light. So you're looking back in time. Our own Milky Way galaxy is about 150 1,000 light years across, but the nearest neighbor galaxy, Andromeda, is about 2 million light years away. So you're looking at something that's taken presumably about 2 million years just for that light to get to us. You're looking back in time. Now we're seeing galaxies billions of light years in distance. So we can compare what they looked like billions of years back with more nearby ones and try to get a picture of how things have unfolded since the beginning of our universe. It's quite humbling to see that.
One thing I'm always struck with in any astronomical conversation is astronomy doesn't move real fast. We're talking about billions of years of light. In fact, I think this antenna image that we're looking at, supposedly, maybe this could happen to the Milky Way somewhere way down the road in the future with Andromeda if these guys continue to be drawn towards one another.
That's right. Yep. We're anticipating some mergers within our own little local group of galaxies, because while most galaxies are caught along the expansion of space and so they tend to move away from each other, there can be pockets where galaxies are close enough that their mutual gravity will pull them together. And so in our little neighborhood, there are smaller galaxies being pulled toward us, and we would anticipate maybe some merging activity, but not for a long time, so I don't think you need to worry about
that. So we shouldn't worry about that this weekend.
Not soon.
So you obviously see a lot of things. What's something that has really caused you to go, oh, wow? Or do you have a favorite?
I do. Well, I like looking at stars. Let's look at that star cluster again. We're going to zoom in and see it as we zoom in from a ground-based image of this star cluster, from what you can see from a telescope on the ground. And then using Hubble's sharp capabilities for resolution, we go very
there should have been an oh
there.
Wow right there. I think there was. I think there kind of was, but there should have been a collective,
right?
Oh my goodness.
That's the Omega Centauri cluster, and I just wanted you to see the context of where these things fit into these larger regions in the sky. That amazes me. The fact that stars still form, this is a colorful nebula, the Orion Nebula, and it's beautiful. It's bright colors lit up by stars that have recently formed. I think that's incredible to be able to see active regions where stars are still forming. And then we can also see in them. Here's another zoom in, another one of these brightly colored nebulae, again, starting with the ground-based telescope images, which are spectacular in their own right. But then zooming in with Hubble, we can see what's going on deep inside these interstellar clouds. And this gives me an oh, wow factor. A nebula, this here being a dense gas and dust. Here's a pillar of dust buried deep inside this nebula. And oh wow, what just happened? I'll tell you what just happened. We were able to see inside that column of gas and dust because Hubble's camera has an infrared channel that allows you to see and peer inside that dust and gas and see what's going on. And right in the middle of this picture, you can see a bright blob. That's what we call a protostar. It's a baby star heating up. And those funny looking things on either side of it are jets. When new stars form, they actually have exhaust jets, and some of the material that's coalescing on the star will get caught in this magnetic field structure and ejected out the poles in these bipolar jets. So you can see this with your eyes, if you had very sharp eyes, or with the visible light camera on Hubble, and then with the infrared, you can see inside that pillar and see a baby star. That's an oh wow for me. And we can see stars as they continue to form. I like the idea that the universe is still active. It's not stagnant. It's not dead. Things are still forming. Things are still dynamic. And things are still beautiful.
So one of the things that you focus on every day is exoplanet research. And most all of us at least see that on the headline here or there. Tell us about the whole new discovery of exoplanets. Are there planets outside of our solar system? And should we discover one in a habitable zone that potentially has life? What are the implications? And I probably shouldn't ask you, do you think we're going to find one? But you can answer that if you want to.
Or is there alien life among us, you could ask. People always ask, if you ask, is there intelligent life elsewhere? And people say, well, do you think we'll find intelligent life here first? That's a good question. This is a really exciting time for astronomy. We're discovering things that we never would have imagined actually detecting, but people have imagined the idea of finding planets and life elsewhere all throughout human history. It's just that now we're actually detecting at least the planets for the first time. We have detected hundreds of planets outside our own solar system within the last 20 years. So we live in exciting times. And those planets are mostly detected indirectly. We see how planets tug on their parent star every time they orbit because of the mutual gravity. So you see the star wobbling. We're now even starting to take crude images of some of these extrasolar planets. Most of them that we see are these big gas giant planets. But we're progressing toward finding planets more and more like Earth. It does make you wonder, are we going to find an Earth-like planet? And are we going to find planets that harbor life? We haven't yet off the Earth, but we're progressing very quickly in that technology. Let me show you what that looks like. First, another pretty picture. This is an older star losing its outer atmosphere. This is the Butterfly Nebula. Yeah. So stars are even beautiful when they get old, as well as when they're born. That's a beautiful one. This is a star that's died and blown up as a supernova, but it's beautiful. It's the Crab Nebula. I'll get back to that. But let me show you what extrasolar planets might look like. The Kepler telescope is another NASA facility operating right now, and it's finding planets by looking for transiting systems. Those are stars where the planets are orbiting along our line of sight. So you see the starlight dim every time that planet orbits. And here's a system where they found six planets around one star. And this little graph, this is the only technical plot here today, but it shows you how many planets per year over the last 22 years have been detected. And you see the numbers rising and rising and rising. We're finding them at greater and greater rates indirectly and trying to figure out what they might be like. So you asked, what will it mean if we find other planets and life? Well, first of all, we all are finding other planets. I think that's extremely exciting. We're trying to find out if any of them could harbor life. We're starting to be able to study their atmospheres. We're trying to figure out if we see what we call biomarkers, which would be elements or chemistry in the atmospheres that would be indicative of biological activity. That'll be very exciting. What will it mean faith-wise if we find life? I suppose that's another question on your mind. I think it would be very exciting. I mean, we find life everywhere on this planet, a weird life at the bottom of the ocean, interesting life in places where we didn't think life could exist. If God can bless life on this planet, why not other places? I think that would be a very interesting and a glorifying to God kind of discovery. But we don't know yet. Now, if we find intelligent life out there, we have to ask, okay, what's Jesus doing for them? And we can ask him and find out. So.
Exactly. So I know just based on some rudimentary science that we're in a very precious place in the universe in terms of observability. We can see so well. God wanted us to see the heavens. And so we're looking at these fantastic images and we're discovering new things every day. What, tell us some of the things. What does this mean for our understanding of God? Or what do we learn about God as we look out into the universe that he's made?
I thought about that a lot. I mean, you have to be careful because sometimes people try to use scientific details to prove God's action here and there and otherwise, and that rarely works because usually you do a little more science and you find out the sort of natural processes that are at play. But I believe that God is the author of the natural processes, so it's all God's handiwork. I do think we can, though, as people of faith, I can glean some of the nature of God, I think, by what we see. One is just enormous love of beauty. I mean, the fact that we can see these beautiful galaxies, stars, and recognize it as beauty, I think tells us that God loves beauty and he's given us the ability to recognize it. We connect with God through beauty. I believe we see something of God's patience. You know, we like things instantly, but we see things happening over scales of space and time that are just unfathomable to us, that our lifespans are short, and we're just finding out that we're in one tiny little pocket of an enormous universe, and yet God's not overwhelmed by this at all. So I think that's something I learn is God's patience. And then I also believe that God is a lover of life. I mean, we know that life is flourishing on at least one planet. And so this whole universe has been conducive to vibrant life in at least one place here. And maybe other places, we don't know. The Bible is kind of silent on that part. But I think those are some of the things we can learn about God. Also, God's provision. I didn't get to talk about these, but we see how stars, remember that exploding star I talked about? Mm-hmm. This is the Crab Nebula. When you look carefully at material buried in these exploded stars, as you see on the left here, that's the debris of another exploded star. When you do the spectroscopy, that's what that graph is on the right, you see elements in that material that have been created in that star, carbon and oxygen, things we need for life. We see how stars are the factories for heavier elements. I believe God is a God of provision for our needs in most spectacular ways. What better factory than stars to create the things that we need for life? So I praise God for that.
I wonder if you have one more image of a deep field shot. Is there one more there? Because I know Plato said that the study of astronomy leads to humility.
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes when we see the individual element, we go, wow. But then tell us about an image like this one and tell people what they're looking at.
The deep fields are my favorite. This is one of them, and all a deep field means is that we pointed the telescope for a long time, in this case the Hubble Space Telescope, in the same direction so you could collect light and see the dimmest, most distant objects out there. This looks like a collection of stars, but it isn't. This is an image of galaxies. Every little blip of light there is a galaxy external to our own Milky Way galaxy. And so each one of these little blips of light has hundreds of billions of stars. So that in itself should blow you away because this is a tiny little pencil beam area of the sky. Imagine that extrapolated over the whole sky. But then if you look at that little boxed region and it's blown up on the right side, that's one particular galaxy. And it's one of the most, it is the most distant galaxy that we've ever seen and pointed out there. We use redshifts to identify them in astronomy. But let me just put it this way. We believe the universe started with the let there be light, as I call it, event, or the Big Bang, about 13.7 billion years ago. And this light, this galaxy is shining its light from within that first 0.7 of the 13.7 billion years. So we're seeing back almost to the beginning of creation now with the earliest galaxies. That's a chilling effect for me, and it humbles me to no end that we're part of this magnificent universe that God has created and that God loves us immensely as part of this.
That's fantastic. Let's thank Jennifer and give her a hand.
I hope you've enjoyed listening in on this conversation. This is what we love doing at Q. I love putting two people together who have a common shared goal or passion and letting them just talk. And we just kind of listen in. It's so fascinating. And not often do we get to have that experience. But today was one of those great experiences. Many people have loved this particular conversation at Q because it really did value science and how we as Christians can appreciate what we're learning and still learning and that's yet to be learned about the world that we live in, this beautiful, wonderful world. You know, sometimes people get very caught up, and I understand there's passions about the beginnings of time and creation and how did this begin and is it sixth day or theistic evolution or natural evolution, and there's all these debates culturally. Obviously, it's about our textbooks. We talk about it, you know, as we talk with our kids in American life where one form of science is being taught. But I think this conversation actually helps people appreciate that, look, as followers of Jesus, we can appreciate the beauty of science. And even if there's debate about how this came to be, there is no arguing about how amazing this is and how much we learn when we see the design of the universe and we see how God's designed it and how every little detail works together, how beautiful it is. And it just makes us step back in wonder and say, wow, and give glory and praise to God who designed and created it all. And so I hope today you're more inspired. I hope you take a moment to kind of gaze up at the stars the next time it's a cloudless night and you're having a moment, and that you'll remember back to some of what's being described, because far beyond even what our eyes can see, there's amazing things still happening, still being created in the galaxies. And I hope you'll appreciate that the same way that I do. And until next time, I hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll look forward to talking again on the next episode. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.